side of Cyprus.
You obviously had to learn new languages really quickly as a child. Did you have strategies that helped you to do that?
I didn't have any strategies myself. I know that my parents had a strategy, which was pretty simple and effective, as it turns out. And that was to just throw me right into public school, like right into the pool, so to speak, so I could be completely immersed in the language that I was trying to learn. And like looking back, I guess it makes sense. First, when I was 4 years old, and then when I was 6 when we moved to Cyprus. But I have to admit, it definitely made for a challenging first couple years, both in the UK and then in Cyprus. I was old enough to have memories from when we moved to Cyprus, and I remember being in school and having the feeling of kind of like being in inside a foreign movie. Like your life is happening around you, but you don't understand what people are saying. And this went on for like a whole year that I was in first year of elementary school. I have one memory of being in class. There was maybe 20 of us, 20 kids in class, and the teacher was up front delivering the lesson, and it was just another day of me having no idea what was being said around me. And I just got up from my desk, and it wasn't recess. I just went out into the playground because it didn't make any sense to just be sitting at this desk not knowing what was being said. So I just got up and went to play, and my teacher just let me go outside, and I was on the swings all by myself while everybody else was in class. And yeah, just having that feeling of, well, I have no idea what is going on around me. And that happened for a full year. Just everything was weird and foreign, from school to, I didn't really have any friends yet because, we couldn't talk. I didn't really start learning Greek until my family moved from the city to a small town in the mountains. The school was much, much smaller. Like, it wasn't a town, it was a village. So the school was much smaller, way fewer kids in class. And again, I was the foreign kid that didn't speak any Greek. And my teacher took interest slash pity, I guess, on me, and would stay with me after school and go through the material of the day over again and get me to learn Greek and start learning the words. And by that point, I had been there for a year and a half, coming up to 2 years, and some stuff was sticking. And with that additional attention that my teacher was giving me, that's when I started really learning the language.
Did you start to speak Greek at home then as you learned it?
I did with my dad's relationship to Greek was also interesting. So he was born in Cyprus, and they moved to the UK when he was 5 years old. So he spoke Greek when he moved to Cyprus, but grew up speaking English. So then when we moved back to Cyprus when he was in his mid-30s, his Greek wasn't really strong, not like someone who had grown up in Cyprus or even gone to school in Cyprus. So even though in those first 2 years, like, he helped me along my learning of the language, because I was, actually growing up in the country and going to school, pretty soon my language skills far surpassed my dad's. And his reading and writing in Greek was actually pretty poor. Like, he could speak it, of course, and he got back into it once we moved back, but it wasn't, how shall I say this? It wasn't, educated Greek. It was just conversational Greek. And as a little side note, I keep saying Greek, but in Cyprus they speak a very distinct dialect. Cypriot is, it's different enough from mainstream Greek that the really heavy dialects that's, spoken in villages can be different enough from Greek and use different vocabulary and slang and words that a person from mainland Greece wouldn't understand what's being said. And it's interesting growing up in Cyprus because in schools you're taught proper Greek, but speaking to folks, like even outside during recess, like you switch to Cypriot dialect. And it sounds like an exaggeration, but it's not. It's different enough that it could almost be its own language. And in fact, when I was growing up in Cyprus, there was a bit of a movement brewing that was advocating for Greek Cypriot to be recognized as its own language. I remember the main argument against it was that because it didn't have its own form of writing that didn't just borrow from regular Greek, that was the one catch that was making folks opposed to considering it its own language rather than a dialect.
Do you think speaking several languages may have opened you to new ideas and made you a more creative person?
That's such a good question, Catherine. I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think one thing that happens with speaking different languages is definitely, yes, being exposed to different ideas and worldviews, even from how the language describes the world, you kind of get to see that there are different lenses to look through to understand how we navigate through this life, not to get too philosophical, but there's a lot of poetry and imagery and how sentences and words are put together in Greek. And I know English often gets a bad rep of not being as rich and poetic as, maybe some of the romantic languages, which I don't fully agree with, but Greek definitely does have a very poetic way of putting words and sentences together, including when, including for, swearing and describing things in a negative way. It can be very creative that way. So I find myself finding a lot more satisfaction in expressing anger, frustration, and swearing in Greek than any other language.
What do you love about being multilingual, and do you find anything difficult about it?
I love the fact that it allows me to relate perhaps more easily to folks that also speak those languages. And that relational piece that I'm talking about also extends to having a lot of understanding for the feeling of needing to navigate in a country that isn't speaking your native tongue. So in my line of work, I've worked in nonprofit that supports folks to find work. And when newcomers and migrants, some of the folks that we support, there's been a lot of satisfaction in having an understanding for what that feels like, needing to set up your life and find work and build a social network without relying on the comfort and competency of doing that in your native tongue.
So, anything tough about it?
You know, what's tough is realizing how much of the languages I've lost without the opportunity to practice them. And Greek is one that definitely breaks my heart the most. When I moved away from Cyprus after going to school there, and I excelled in school in Cyprus. I was an avid reader, and I loved history and Greek in the way that we learn, English and literature in schools here. I spoke Greek really, really well. I had a real strong command of the language. I don't mean to sound big-headed. I'm just contrasting it against today, where I can understand it perfectly, but to just switch into speaking Greek, I would need to be immersed in it for a little while first. It just doesn't roll off the tongue. And every now and then, I'll force myself to think in Greek. Like, how would I? And the words just don't come to me. And when I was moving away from Cyprus, I remember having these conversations with folks said, if you don't practice the language, you'll forget it. And at the time, because of being so fluent in Greek, like I just didn't realize that was a reality, that was a possibility. Same with French and Spanish. The area we live in just doesn't provide the opportunities to speak unless you really go out looking for it. Like it's an English-speaking part of the world, predominantly, you know? So yeah, that is that's difficult, kind of assessing my current situation and realizing how much of that skill I've lost, and you know how much work and intention it would take for me to get back to the level that I was at one point in my life.
Do you think about it in terms of passing languages on to your child?
Yeah, that's a really bang on point. Yeah, that is part of the sadness. Bennett, that's my daughter's name. I do speak French to her and a few Greek words here and there, but it's not the same as when you're, you know, feeling confident and fluent in it. Like it is a little forced. And I mean, we don't speak French or Greek at home, so her mom, for example, has no context of what I'm saying. But yeah, I try to expose her to it as much as I can. Do feel limited in it.
So, in a recent episode of the North American Francophone podcast, Claire Marie Brisson used the phrase a language that feels like home. It sounds like Greek may be your language that feels like home. Is that true?
I would say so, yeah. And more specifically, Cypriot, especially since it is a dialect that's, you know, very specific to that island. It's not, you know, spoken anywhere else in the world. Like there's not a huge Cypriot diaspora. It's highly unlikely to run into a person speaking Cypriot. I think I only have in Canada once. Like I've run into a few Greek folks, but that doesn't really feel like home, like proper Greek, because Greece isn't Cyprus. There's a huge cultural connection, but it's a different country altogether. So one time, yeah, at a supermarket, I heard people speaking Cypriot, and yeah, those words are very well spoken, like a language that feels like home. Like it instantly transported me to, and yeah, there was no hesitation to go up to them, and they were just as shocked as I was to run into someone in the Kootenays speaking Cypriot. At the same time, it's a little interesting because the whole concept of home is one that I struggle to pinpoint. I grew up in Cyprus, but I'm not Greek. I'm not Cypriot. You know, I was, you know, the foreign kids, it's, you know, my whole life in Cyprus, even though I was, you know, I went to school there and all my friends were Cypriots. Like no one's called Ness in Cyprus. Everyone's called Andreas and Konstantinos and what have you, know what I mean? So the name and how I look, as soon as folks knew, met my mother, like it was clear that, oh, you're not native born to Cyprus. So although Cypriot feels like home in the sense of that's where I spent my childhood, not so much that's where I'm from, you know, with that sense of real belonging. And you know, the UK doesn't feel like home, France doesn't feel like home, Canada feels like home, but in the way of how I imagine a lot of immigrants, you know, feel like this is my new home, my chosen home, where I've now built roots. But yeah, it's almost a daily experience that I'm kind of reminded that, oh yeah, you know, I didn't start my life here. People will bring up TV shows that everyone grew up with, and I'm like, no, I didn't grow up with that, you know. So yeah, the whole idea of where is home is still a question mark for me. So there's definitely a very comforting familiarity with hearing Cypriot, but insofar as I consider it home in that full wholesome sense, there's still like something lacking there.
That was my conversation with Nespen Amran, who lives in the West Kootenay region of British Columbia. You have been listening to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast, hosted and produced by Catherine Fisher. The podcast celebrates March, the month of the Francophonie, and it was made possible by the Dialogue Foundation, which has a mission to engage and sustain dialogue within the Francophonie and with all of Canada's diversity. This year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie partners and funders include the Government of Canada, the Linguistic Portal of Canada, the National Film Board, Air Canada, La Fédération de Jeunesse Canadienne Française, NAB Canada, and many other groups, including the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
What is your opinion about paper book and electronic books?
Hi, my name is AJ. Paper books are more authentic, I guess, and electronic books are easy to carry, so if you're like a bookworm, it's easy to just keep up with all the book trends and everything. But I'm more like a visual person, I like to like, or like a hands-on person, so I like to have the book itself to be able to concentrate and everything. But yeah, the online book is not really for me, even though it's good for textbooks, they're cheaper.
My name is Joshua. I think electronic books are more accessible nowadays, especially with how technology has grown. So I feel like they've become more popular in recent years compared to physical books. I would say at the start of COVID, I would say paper books, but as we transition through online, I would say ebooks now. I think it's just the convenience of having it on my screen while I'm doing my work. So it's a lot easier, yeah.
Hi, I'm Shivka. I'm a fourth year here at SFU. Ooh, I love a good paper book, but I do find myself using more ebooks recently just because it's more convenient and easy to read on the go. Like when you're on the bus, you don't have a whole thick book with you. Just having your iPad and scrolling through, that's so much easier. But like the smell of the paper, if you know what I mean, from a real book, that's something I truly enjoy.
And the feeling of the writing is totally different from...
Yes, I feel much more connected to a book when I have it like physically in my hand as opposed to it just being like on my iPad. So yeah, it differs with papers too. Like when you're reading them for class, I read a lot because I'm in health sciences. And if I'm reading the actual paper in my hand, I'm like much more likely to remember it than just that on my iPad. So it's definitely different.
What is your opinion about paper book and electronic books?
My name's Sakraj Garcha. I've only used online textbooks so far. This is my first semester, and I would say they're a lot easier, at least like in grade 12 when I'd have to be flipping through pages to find stuff. With e-textbooks, I can just hit Command F and like find the spot I'm looking for. So it's a lot more convenient.
How about paper book?
I feel like it's a lot more work and you have to carry them around, things like that. I'm not really a fan of them.
My name is Imani. I personally like electronic books a lot more. I would say just because I use all my technology, so I can bring my textbooks everywhere and not have like the heavy weight in my bag. I like paper books because I can write in them and I just like the feeling of them, but they are heavy and also more expensive usually. So I do kind of miss the paper writing, so I got a paper screen protector for my iPad, so then it kind of feels like paper, but I do really like the paper writing, which is kind of something I miss about the electronic books, I think.
This is Bird Note. A flock of geese wings across the sky in perfect V-shaped formation. It's one of the most enduring images of migration. Step outside and you might hear them, migrating after dark or flying above the clouds, invisible. The rhythmic honking of Canada geese is what you probably hear most often. While the calls of white-feathered snow geese are more sharp and nasal. The voices of greater white-fronted geese sound like laughs or yelps. Cackling geese, which look like pint-sized Canada geese, have a rhythmic, higher-pitched call. Geese migrate north between February and April, making stopovers along the way to rest and eat. Most are bound for their breeding grounds in the far north. But we'll hear them again soon, on their way back south in October. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein. Did you know BirdNote delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox? Sign up for our newsletter at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
Netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. On the slopes this winter, some people are clipping into skis made with an unusual ingredient, algae oil.
Winter sports becoming one of the first use cases of these modern bio-based oil applications was really appealing to me.
Matt Sturbins is a former professional skier and the founder of Wonder Alpine, which makes skis, snowboards, and apparel using plastics derived from microalgae. The materials are developed by Wonder Alpine's parent company, a biotech firm called Checkerspot. Plastics are typically made from fossil fuels. The process produces carbon pollution at all stages, from extracting and transporting fossil fuels to the refining and manufacturing processes. Using algae eliminates the need for fossil fuels as a raw ingredient, and Checkerspot uses renewable energy at its manufacturing facility. So Sturban says they're making skis that are better for the climate, without compromising the ski's performance.
Performance is not lost. If anything, it's enhanced. We're able to achieve a nice damp, stable, and supple feel.
It's one example of how companies can leave fossil fuels behind and create products that are better for the earth. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Have you ever felt so sad that you don't know what's making you sad? Have you ever felt so alone because no one understands? They ask you, how are you? And you say, I'm tired, because it'll be too much to explain that you're sad. No one understands, even writing it down. Nothing seems to help. The dark days are just dark. We understand. Talk to me or any one of us at the Crisis Intervention and Suicide Prevention Center. Just dial 1-833-456-4566 or visit crisisservicescanada.ca.
Hi, I'm Amy.